Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Let's begin today with President Trump's travel ban that affects people from six predominantly Muslim countries and which goes into effect at 8 p.m. Eastern Time tonight. It follows this week's Supreme Court decision that allows part of the ban to be reinstated. According to the High Court, anyone with a credible claim of a bona fide relationship with a person or entity inside the United States will still be able to enter the country. But how is the government going to interpret who has those bona fide relationships? In a moment, we'll hear from a Boston-based immigration lawyer. But first, let's go to Alan Gomez, who covers immigration for USA Today. He joins us from Miami. Alan, good to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me, Anthony.
So there are new guidelines from the Trump administration that defines who is considered close family. It seems like it's not completely intuitive or straightforward. So who exactly will be allowed in? Who will not be allowed into the U.S.?
And just to be clear, we're getting some guidance. We're still waiting for quite a bit because there are a lot of questions that remain about how they're going to implement this. But what we know right now is that it has to do with that family connection. And so what the Supreme Court said is that if somebody can prove that they have a, quote, bona fide relationship with right. somebody in the U.S., they will be allowed to continue traveling into the United States. And so what the administration has done is they spent the last couple of days looking at case law, looking at U.S. laws, and they found a definition in the Immigration and Nationality Act that defines a relative as a parent, spouse, child, an adult son or daughter, a son-in-law or a daughter-in-law, or a sibling. Excluded from that, so this does none of these counts, are grandparents, aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, cousins, brothers-in-law, and fiancés. So they've kind of drawn that line right there, and as you can imagine, a lot of us have had questions about why they drew that line, and immigration advocates are already very upset that they seem to have gone with the most restrictive version of what a relative could be. And so that's the family part that we're dealing with. That's what we know so far.
Yeah, one could certainly imagine a family where a grandparent or indeed an aunt or an uncle, a nephew or a niece could be very central to that family. But under these guidelines, those folks would be considered not to have a bona fide relationship and therefore would not be able to come to the U.S.
Exactly. And this is the kind of thing that I would expect that we might see some lawsuits over relatively quickly.
Yeah.
Because, right, this what the Supreme Court did, you know, leave it a little bit vague, so it left it a little bit difficult. But as I said, immigration advocates are already saying that the administration is kind of gone a little bit further and is kind of violating at least the spirit of what the Supreme Court was trying to do. And so we're probably going to see some more lawsuits coming on this pretty soon.
Now, visa applicants can also get into the U.S. under the terms of this partial ban if they have formal ties to a U.S. entity. What exactly does that mean, or how is the Trump administration going to interpret that?
Luckily on that one, we did get a little bit more guidance from the Supreme Court. So, for example, if you are a national of one of these six countries that are targeted by the ban and you have a standing job offer from a U.S. company, that will qualify. If you're a student in one of these countries and you've been admitted to or are currently enrolled in a U.S. university, you'll be allowed to continue traveling. But from there, things get a little bit murkier. So we're not, like, for example, if you're trying to come to the United States on a business visa, but you only have a couple of, let's say, meetings in the United States, does that qualify? We still don't know. And they made very clear as well that a refugee who is just beginning the application process, that the nonprofit agency here in the United States, who would sort of be their sponsor and the one that shepherds them through the process, they will not be considered an entity or to establish that bona fide relationship.
Okay.
So refugees who've gone through the process already and are approved to enter the country by July 6th will be allowed to do so, but it looks like those coming afterwards are going to have a much harder time.
Much harder time, because the Trump administration's executive order includes a ban on all refugees to the U.S. for 120 days. things. Exactly. So you're saying they're going to be pretty much out of luck under this new ban.
Right. The only way they'll be able to get in is if they are going through the process and they also have a close relative, like we spoke of before.
Right.
So in other words, so that's the only way they're going to be able to get in for the next 120 days.
According to the Washington Post, and you know, I'm wondering if this is consistent with your reporting, the cap of 50,000 refugees this fiscal year has nearly been reached. According to the Post, we're at 49,008 refugees have been admitted as of Wednesday. So is the question of refugees a moot point anyway, given that the cap has almost been reached?
I mean, the question of the, and this has been one of the more challenging aspects of the Trump administration's attempts to institute a travel ban. Courts have ruled over the past few months that they could not enforce that cap. Prior, it was well over 100,000, the number of refugees that we're admitting, but Trump is trying to lower that to 50,000. Courts have blocked him from doing so. But despite that, the administration in the last few months has been admitting a very, very small number of people. Some historically low numbers of refugees have been getting into the country. So even if that part has been, they've been prevented from lowering the cap that much, in practice, they have slowed down that process. So right, at this point, we're just over 49,000 refugees who've come in this fiscal year. There's only a few months left. And the way that they're going to be handling this now, yeah, it means, you know, maybe we'll pass 50,000, maybe we won't. The Supreme Court made it clear that if refugees applying in the next few months, again, can establish that close family relationship here in the United States, they'll be allowed to come in, but for the most part, it looks like the rest of them will be barred moving forward. So we're probably going to end the fiscal year, if not at 50,000, right around that number.
All right. That's Alan Gomez. He covers immigration for U.S. Today, speaking to us today from Miami. Alan, thank you so much. We really appreciate your reporting and your clarity. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's turn now to Susan Church. She's a local immigration lawyer. She was one of the first lawyers to challenge President Trump's executive order on immigration. She chairs the New England chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Susan, thanks for coming back into the studio.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you make of the State Department's guidelines about who will and who will not be allowed into the country? To me, the line seems arbitrary. Is that fair to say?
You know, welcome to immigration law. The lines are arbitrary and unfair all over the process of immigration law, and it causes a lot of frustration for people. They are arbitrary. I'm not sure why grandparents are suddenly a threat to America. I don't see why they're excluded. I'm particularly unhappy with the fiancé visa exclusion. A fiancé comes on a visa called a K visa. When they arrive in the United States, they are required to marry their particular future spouse within 90 days. So they would be a spouse of a U.S. citizen and therefore a qualifying relative were they able to come for the process. So there's a lot of inequity in the cable. There's some good, though. They didn't cancel existing visas, so there will be people who should be allowed to enter if they had a valid visa in time. But there's a lot of problems with it, too.
Well, grandparents, grandchildren, aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, cousins, brothers-in-laws, and sisters-in-laws, fiancés, as you said, and other extended family members will be kept out. Alan Gomez suggested that this could lead to more litigation. Do you see that happening?
I think it's going to be a little harder to litigate these people if Customs and Border Protections follows the exact guidance that the Department of State has given, meaning that they allow anyone in that is part of the Department of State cable allowed in. I think the litigation would come from the fact when we get into people being allowed by the Department of State, but then Customs and Border Protection arbitrarily cancels their visa there and trying to help the person once they get here. I think we agree that that is an extremely restrictive definition and it violates the spirit of what the Supreme Court was saying. There's no requirement that they go to the INA and use the restrictive definition of the INA. So yes, there will be opportunities for litigation as far as the restrictiveness of the definition.
Susan, I spoke to you on Monday after the Supreme Court decision, and you mentioned that only a small number of people would really be affected by the ruling, and you actually called the ruling on the travel ban a victory. I'm wondering if you still feel that way today.
I actually feel very strongly that it's a victory, and I had a lot of sleepless nights over what the Supreme Court could have done in response to the petitions by the government. there is a problem with standing for people who don't have any ties to the United States. When I was at the airport during the first travel ban litigation, I didn't see any B visas, which are visitor visas, coming in unless they were mothers of either U.S. citizens or lawful permanent residents who are about to give birth. You know, the grandmothers were getting in to see their grandchildren being born. Mm. But that was it. That's because we have an incredibly restrictive policy about visas from these countries already. So I was relieved that they said that there are, I mean, in not taking so many people off of the list, there is some rights for visa holders in not restricting the law further. I think it was a victory because it established the right of some people to come here.
I'm wondering if there are families, individuals that you've been working with who are going to be affected by these new guidelines. I mean, we know in general that they are, but I mean, if there are specific people that you have in mind.
I do worry about people who are diversity visa recipients. There are people who are called extraordinary ability recipients. So they have received a visa just because they are so outstanding in their field that they would be a benefit to the United States. Those people are excluded from entering the United States on a granted visa unless they have a close family resident. So there's a whole category of people that are still going to be out there and be affected by this.
Now, the cable from the State Department says that any relationship must be, quote, formal, documented, and formed in the ordinary course rather than for the purpose of evading the executive order. I'm wondering what kind of challenge that poses to some of these folks, to refugees. Are they going to be able to get that kind of level of documentation in order to get their papers in order and get into the United States?
That is what I think most immigration lawyers agree on with this order, is that how is this going to be enforced? How is fairness going to persevere through this? It depends on who gets you at the consulate. It depends on who gets you at Customs and Border Protection. How do you prove this relationship was pre-existing? I think that's where all the opportunities for litigation and the inequities are going to come in.
Well, we'll be watching this closely. Susan Church, she is the chair of the New England chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Susan, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Stay with us. Coming up, a look at an offshore wind project off the coast of Martha's Vineyard and Massachusetts' commitment to wind energy. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.